thanks to our sponsor, ShareGate. Does managing cloud spending keep you awake at night? Trying to figure out how your budget is being spent is enough to give anyone goosebumps. Our friends at ShareGate understand that most cloud architects and developers want to create great applications, not count dollars and cents. That's why they built ShareGate Overcast, to help admins control Azure costs through transparency, collaboration, and simplicity. With anomaly detection, AI-powered cost forecasting, as well as personalized cost recommendations, and a unified Azure governance platform, you'll see results from the moment you connect Overcast to your tenant. To start a free trial of ShareGate Overcast so you can get back to building big ideas, visit ShareGate.com/overcast_CS. This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 366. Today, CJ and I are going to talk about some news and rehash my SharePoint framework wish list, recorded live July the 2nd, 2020. This episode is brought to you by Raygun. Raygun provides full stack error, crash, and performance monitoring for tech teams. Whether you're a software engineer looking to diagnose and resolve issues with greater speed and accuracy, a product manager drowning in bug reports, or you're just concerned you're losing customers due to poor quality online experiences, Raygun can provide you with the answers. Get full stack error and performance monitoring in one place. The next time that you're struggling to replicate errors and performance issues in your code base, think Raygun. Head over to raygun.com and get up and running within minutes and dramatically improve the online experience of your users. Back to the show. Good morning, CJ. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Apologies in advance to all of our listeners hearing trees falling around my house. I may have scheduled some tree service company to come and remove a couple of dead trees from the sort of forested area beside our house on the same day and same time that we're recording a podcast. So, timber.
You know, it's kind of ironic. You said this. First of all, I doubt people are going to hear it. I can barely hear a slight hum in the background. So I will compliment you on your microphone upgrade that we did a couple months ago, because I think it's working out quite well right now and noise canceling everything else in the background. Kind of just sounds like a dishwasher's running in at faint distance. But it's funny you say that, because we actually just had a guy come to our house and look at a tree that from the last couple storms we've had is now hanging into our yard that looks like it's about to fall into the yard. And because it's coming from the preserve, I can't cut it down. Thankfully, the preserve is maintained by our CDD. So they're going to send a tree guy to come out and go like, we'll pay for it, take it down. So
yeah, our next door neighbors had a tree fall on their house last winter, and we'd warned them about these dead trees. And so now they seem a lot more motivated to get rid of the dead trees. And so we thought we'd join the bandwagon and get rid of the ones that are on our side of the fence.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
What you been up to this past week, aside from cutting trees?
Oh, boy. Yeah, well, weirdly, I've spent a little bit of time in the office this week. I went in and just got out of the house for a little bit a change of scene for me. Nobody's there, right? Our office is still shut down. But went in and visited that yesterday, and it was so surreal. It was like getting back to, it was weird. It was kind of like, you know those movies where you wake up and there's like, you're the only person on earth? It felt a little bit like that. Like there was just nobody in the building. All the doors are locked, lights are off. You know, it felt very surreal. But it was nice, actually. Nice to just get out of the house and make sure everything in the office was still there, I suppose. I hadn't been there in a long time. So yeah, got that done, but it was a very odd feeling.
It's an interesting feeling. Like it's very unsettling. Like when you're not, when you go back to, like, I'm fine being at home and I'm fine staying home for like extended time and stuff. This isn't really, it's not bothering me all that much. Actually, it's not really bothering me, but it's when I go out into public, and especially with like right now, how the situation is in Florida, It's getting more and more serious. It is a very awkward feeling. Like I hate the feeling of going into the grocery store. Generally, my wife does the grocery store trip, but when I go in, walking through the store, I hate the feeling of like the anxiety or the fear. Being scared isn't the right word, but there's just something about, I'm just very uneasy.
On edge. Yeah, I know what you mean. I envy those countries that are sort of a bit more under control and life is going a bit back to normal. What's weird is, you know, I've got lots of relatives in New Zealand, and I don't think they all quite get how screwed up it is still here. And I think they've been back to normal for quite a while, quite a few weeks now. And it's literally back to normal. Like, other than tourism, people can't come into the country. But other than that, it's pretty much exactly the same. And Yeah, and I think they just sort of started losing track that, you know, we've still got all of this going on and there's no end in sight, right? It's quite a long way to go.
That's the scary thing for me right now is that it's just, we're on an upswing right now. Like there's no, things aren't changing and the climate around, trying to find the words that I've used to keep this from going from being a political thing or to being something that's controversial, but it just seems that...
You're not confident it's going to get better based on what you're seeing.
Yeah, yeah, I have no reason to believe it's going to get better. I've seen no signs that make me feel, that give me confidence that we are going in a good direction.
Yep. Yeah, me too.
And not just from our state, but from a country as a whole. So
totally.
I don't know.
It's going to get worse before it gets better.
It is. Now, okay, so let's talk about, first of all, just to let our listeners know that you're going to be flying solo next week.
Yes.
Right? By the time this show comes out, hopefully if things go on schedule the way they normally do, I will hopefully be on a boat somewhere in the Atlantic with my family fishing.
I'm on a boat.
We're going down to the Keys. We originally had a place that we were going to, this resort that we got for a great deal to just try and get away. The Keys, so Florida Keys, for people who aren't familiar, like the bunch of Strait of Islands down at the bottom of the state. And we were going to stay at this one resort that we got a great deal on. And then come to find out that they're getting knocked for cleanliness issues in June. And I don't know about anybody else, but right now, that's kind of like my number one thing I'm interested in when I go somewhere.
Not ideal at this time.
No. Yeah. So it looks like when the Keys closed down for the first shutdown that Florida did, hopefully it was the first one. Hopefully that implies there's more than one. But it looks like they haven't been able to hire all their staff back. And so they're understaffed and they're having a hard time keeping up. So anyway, we switched to a house. So I won't be around next week. I'll be sitting on a beach in the Keys or somewhere in the Keys or on a boat. But so I'm going to let you run the show by yourself next week, completely unsupervised, which is you're fully capable of doing.
Crazy.
Now,
kids are going to run wild.
I came across something this past week, or I shouldn't say I come across it. I knew about this months ago, maybe a year ago, and I didn't do anything about it. And I was told that I have to go watch this. I have to go watch it. I was like,
have you been binging?
Yeah, I was like, the premise, I get it. I like the premise. This is really interesting. But it just was turning into an out of sight, out of mind kind of thing. I started watching it this past week. I binged all the way through it. And I cannot tell you how sad I am that last night I sat down to watch another episode and I had realized that I had finished it, the entire series, the night before. CJ, you have got, of you, of every person that I know, you've got to go sign up for Apple TV Plus. You get a 7-day free subscription. You can easily get all the way through this first show without a problem.
Nice.
It's called For All Mankind.
Okay.
The premise of the show is the Russians got to the moon before we got to the moon.
Oh, cool.
And then it's just what happens when history, how history changed, how history was different. And I will not spoil any of this for you or for anybody else that's listening. So don't worry about trying to tune out on this. Apple has done, or the producers, whoever it was, they did such an incredible job of making it feel like this is what really happened. It's a drama version of what really happened. Because it's all the same real people. I mean, the Deke Slaytons are in there.
Really?
The Aldrins are in there. The Armstrongs are in there.
That's cool that it's sort of a mashup of historically accurate, but not, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it happened. I mean, there's new people that are in there. Clear. I mean, but it is.
Of course, yeah. That's a cool premise. I will check that out.
There's 10 episodes. That's the only thing I'm going to spoil it on is there's 10 episodes because I don't want you to be as sad as I was last night when I sat down at number 11. I'm like, why isn't it advancing?
Dang. Okay. I will definitely do that. Definitely.
It's really special. I'm looking forward to talking about it with you and warning our listeners to shut off the rest of the show so that we don't spoil it for them. Whoever.
Okay. How about this? I will attempt to get through it before you're back on holiday and then we can nerd out about it.
Well, if you start watching it on a Friday night, you might have to start going back to bed around Sunday morning once you've watched it all.
Yeah, I love it when I get completely hooked like that. It's brilliant.
That's good.
Awesome.
What do you say we do a little bit of news and just kind of talk about the show?
Sounds good.
This episode is sponsored by Nintex. If you could score an extra hour or two back in your day, wouldn't you take it? Because our friends at Nintex want to give you a gift. The gift of time. Seriously, if you haven't checked out what Nintex has to offer lately, you should. The platform built on Azure has evolved a lot, In just the past few months, the Nintex team has added new process mapping capabilities, and most recently, a new e-sign capability called Nintex Sign, powered by Adobe Sign. Nintex also continues to revolutionize products that you know and trust, including Nintex Workflow and Forms. With the power of Nintex, it is faster and easier for you to configure, not code, giving you valuable time back every day to spend it how you want. Test drive the Nintex Process Cloud at Nintex.com. This podcast is brought to you by AvePoint. If you like the Microsoft Cloud Show, you'll love the Shift Happens podcast with MVP and Regional Director Dux Raymond Tsai. Each week, Dux talks with one of the industry's brightest stars about their most challenging modern workplace or digital transformation project. He uncovers the players, organizational hurdles, and last-minute surprises that inevitably rise when ambitious people try to impact their workspace. Season 1 features FedEx, Wells Fargo, Heathrow Airport, United Airlines, and other industry leaders. Go to avpoint.com/blog/shifthappens or search for the hashtag #ShiftHappens. That's one word, Shift Happens. Wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe today. And now, back to the show.
Okay, CJ, Microsoft's in a closing kind of mood, it seems.
Yeah. Seriously.
Last week, we talked about they were closing. We talked about how they were like consumer issues and stuff like that, consumer devices and stuff. And then, or right after the show that came out. And then today, or then it seemed like very soon after that, when I said something along the lines of, I sure wouldn't bet on anything Microsoft consumer.
Yeah.
If it's unless it's Xbox, I wouldn't bet on it. And then it felt like within about an hour of us wrapping up our show last week, we see the news that comes out that, oh, Microsoft is now closing all of their stores.
Yeah, crazy. Well, they're turning 4 of their stores into experience centers, which I think just means stores that you can't actually buy anything in.
Mm-hmm.
So they're keeping a retail presence in their 4 biggies, I think, like New York and London. They're just sort of leaving those as experience centers, which I don't really know. That just seems like, you know, running the clock out on their lease. I don't understand how that's going to work long term.
Yeah.
But I guess we'll see. But yeah, all of their stores, I think there's like 35 of them or something like that.
Oh, is that it? I thought there were more than that.
I can't remember what the last count is. I thought it was like 35. Anyway, all closing.
It's an interesting, I don't know how you can spin this in a positive way. I mean, this does not seem like a good thing. It just kind of, it affirms like what I was thinking that to me that, you know, Microsoft is it's an enterprise company. It is not a consumer company. And I know that people, you know, there are people that buy Surfaces and stuff like that for their laptops and stuff. That's all fine and good. That's not the company. That's not who they are. It's quite capitulation to looking at one of the biggest competitors in the space in Apple and just seeing that, you know, it makes epic news when they shut down a store, because like our store in Jacksonville just got shut down yesterday, re-shut down because of what's going on. And it just, that's crazy. Those experience stores, I agree with you. I don't understand the point. And the only thing I can think of that's kind of like those are the design centers that home builders or like that Tesla has in a mall, to where you can't buy anything at those places. You can meet with people, but that was a really nice advantage to be able to have like the equivalent of a Genius Bar if you had a Windows machine. And now you're back to Best Buy's Geek Squad.
Right. We all know what that's like. Well, some of us do, I suppose. Yeah, so it will be said, like a lot of these stores, right, the Apple stores and the Microsoft stores were in retail locations, right? So where a bunch of other stores were, not necessarily just malls, but like retail locations. So you'd walk around and you'd see the Apple store and you'd see the Microsoft store. Now people are just going to walk around and see the Apple store. And, you know, out of sight, out of mind, right? And I worry that, you know, I thought Microsoft was doing pretty well on their Surface and Xbox and some of those retail things, the core franchises, I guess. Maybe it wasn't enough still. And Saatchi has decided, cool, enough's enough on this. Like, it was a nice experiment, but we're not throwing good money after bad.
Yeah, that you had the Surfaces. Yeah, the Surfaces sell well. I mean, outside of that, anything that's like their Surface brand or Surface devices, you look at things like the headphones or like that dial and stuff. The only people I ever see using those things are people that work for Microsoft. Everybody's like, you ever see anybody use a Surface headphones? And you talk to somebody from Microsoft and they're going, oh yeah, everybody's got them. I'm like, come outside of Redmond.
Nope.
Nobody has them.
I've never seen a pair. I haven't even seen a pair.
The only time I've ever seen them, I've never seen them physically. The only time I've ever seen them is on a Teams call. That's the only time I've ever seen those things.
The sort of the butt plug version or the over-the-ear version?
Can't believe you used it. I agree that that's what they look like. I'm referring to the over-the-ear ones. I've never seen the
in-ear ones.
Versions.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I haven't either. I do think it's sad for partners, right? So the Microsoft stores also had a lot of partner hardware in them, like other PC makers, like laptops and other things in them as well. And so they'll be a pain. I mean, you have to go to somewhere like the equivalent of a Best Buy, wherever you live, and go look at that, or just online, I guess, and take their word for it.
So here's one impact that it may have with it too. So I had to go buy a laptop for my daughter for school. I had to go buy one this morning, and I was looking at getting her a Surface. And when I saw this news, I'm like, you know what? If something happens to this machine, one of them I can take somewhere and just say, get an appointment and get it fixed. Yeah. And the other one I can't. And I was like, you know what? There's something to be said about being able to go somewhere and go like, this doesn't work, help.
Yep, totally.
Especially when it's a kid's device. And I was like, you know what? So we got a refurbished MacBook Air. So
yeah, or just being able to go into a store to pick up an accessory or something like that. You don't want to wait for it from Amazon or what have you. Mm-hmm. In other news, along similar lines, Microsoft is shutting down Mixer. I don't know if you remember what Mixer is, but for those of you who don't know, it's kind of like Twitch. If you don't know what Twitch is, it's huge. It's a bunch of people playing video games online and you can watch them. And you might be like, I don't get it. Doesn't matter if you don't get it. It's massive. There's millions and millions and millions of people watching this stuff. And it's big business. So Microsoft bought a company a few years ago now and integrated it. Microsoft renamed it Mixer. And they've been trying pretty hard at getting it off the ground in a more serious way. So much so that they've started signing exclusive deals with streamers and bring them over to the Mixer platform. So late last year, they signed their biggest contract, which was with a guy called Ninja, who was a Twitch streamer, brought him over to Microsoft World, got him streaming on Mixer, $30 million contract, and 8 or 9 months later, they've released him from his contract and he can walk away because they're shutting it down.
Good job, Ninja.
Yeah, that's baller money and just, you know, crying all the way to the bank, right? So yeah, they've done that with a couple of streamers. They just couldn't build their audience, apparently. They couldn't get enough groundswell. And then they basically said, enough is enough. Again, we're not going to throw good money after bad. And they're shutting it down. They're also reportedly moving the streamers that use that platform to Facebook's gaming streaming platform, which I didn't even know they had one. So that doesn't bode well. And
that was my reaction as well.
Like, wait, Facebook has a gaming platform? Really? So yeah, apparently I went and checked it out. I was surprised they didn't go do something with YouTube. I guess it was Google. But anyway, now I find it funny because Microsoft has stopped their ad spend, $140 million a year on Facebook currently. And they're sending them all their Mixer users. So it's kind of odd.
We touched on this a little bit last week, and I was like, that's the thing that I don't get is that the timing of it is just very confusing to me. I'm not finding fault with what they did. I'm just like, why would you send people to Facebook right now with the drama around Facebook?
Right. But seems a bit confusing. Yeah, certainly not good timing on that side of things.
Mm-mm. Another bit of news from the competitive landscape is AWS. So Amazon or AWS announced a new product called Honeycomb.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fully managed low-code/no-code dev tool that is really, it's targeted for people to make it so that anybody in a company can build an app or a mobile app. To me, the app is built on top of a database inside of AWS. Everything's web-based. Everything is drag-drop design. It seems to me it's like a Power Apps target or a Power Apps compete kind of thing. Developers can build apps and 20 people can use the app for free. I don't know what Power Apps licensing is.
Oh,
I know
God.
It's expensive, but I don't remember if there's a free tier or something like that. So
you have to be a genius to figure it out. So
that's why I don't know, and nope. I intentionally don't pay attention to it.
Yeah. It's pretty cool, actually. I like that AWS are getting into this. This is interesting.
It's nice to see somebody else is competing against Power Apps.
Sure.
It's nice.
Yeah.
And the competition, just generally to me, I've always got the attitude, competition's always good. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do to kind of push them to see what stuff comes out of this.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not expecting much. Like, AWS is not known as a great enterprise software vendor in the productivity space, right? What AWS enterprise products are front of mind or household names, so to speak? Mm. Like they used to do something called Chime, I think it was, which was like instant messaging and video calling and stuff like that. They actually do quite a bit of, you know, they've got an email product, they've got a file sharing product, but nobody really knows of them. They're not household names, so to speak. So it'll be interesting to see if this takes off, but it'll give Power Apps a good run for its money, hopefully.
I have a friend that works at a local financial services company. They're an AWS shop. He asked me if I'd play with this. I was like, no, I'm familiar with it, but I haven't played with it. He's like, this is really easy to use to throw an app together and to get stuff working. I was like, did you ever try Power Apps? He's like, no, we never tried Power Apps, but this, he was amazed at how much he could do with it. Now he's more on the dev side, but I found that to be an interesting reaction when he shared that.
I give it 9 out of 10 chances to work better than Power Apps. It might not do as much, but it's probably a more solid proposition. But anyway, AKS. So if you're a Kubernetes nerd, this will be interesting to you. So in Kubernetes, when you provision an application, you can provision resources. So like, I want a disk connected to this particular pod, right? Like storage connected to a particular pod. And the terminology that the thing that's in Kubernetes, it's a pluggable model that people who run Kubernetes clusters or run Kubernetes clouds or providers of Kubernetes clusters to customers can plug in new modules that let Kubernetes provision more of those types of resources, right? So Azure has gone ahead and built what's called the Azure Service Operator, which is an open source project apparently that they've been working on, which lets people using AKS build Kubernetes apps that go and provision, when you go and load those apps into your Kubernetes cluster or you spin them up, can go and provision more of these Azure-specific services and connect them into your application. So the services include Event Hub, Azure SQL, Cosmos DB, storage accounts, and more. So for example, you could have an application and in your Kubernetes manifest, your definition for your application, you could say, I want some file storage defined, or I want a SQL database that's connected to this Kubernetes service. And behind the scenes, when you go provision it, AKS would actually go provision those resources for you, spin them up and connect them into your application. And it'll be part of your...
All intent and purposes?
Yes, that's it. Just totally lost it halfway through. I got ahead of myself. It will be part of your application, right? It's hooked into the right part of... Right, from a networking point of view, you can go talk to it. Looks like it's part of your application. So it's pretty nice initiative. Yeah, really cool. So that's the Azure Service Operator. If you're into AKS, definitely go check this out. It's very interesting indeed.
That's cool. I have to go read up on that. I had no idea that they did this. They just released it like less than a week ago. But that is really cool though.
Yeah. I mean, there's things like this disk, right? You can go and provision. You've always been able to go provision storage through AKS, stuff like that. But they're just adding more types of resources to it. So you can go provision a SQL database or a Cosmos DB or whatever and hook it into your application. It's nice because then you don't have to go provision those things first and then configure them in your Kubernetes manifest and then deploy your application. It can all sort of be your whole infrastructure as code thing works a lot better.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Flag this to go back and read some more on. Very cool, man.
I know you've got a great pick later on about Kubernetes. So with a twist.
I've been holding that pick for a little bit, but with some of the stuff going on with the news and the riots and stuff, I thought that a wartime pick might not be a good one. But anyway, we'll come back to that.
It's a tech pick, really. It's a tech.
It is. It's a tech pick.
Hey, now, I know you've been really busy with blogging recently, and you've got a recent blog that we wanted to highlight, pick out and highlight a little bit called Your Summer 2020 SPFX Wishlist and what you would like to see out of SPFX. I actually think we should maybe continue this as kind of a theme in the podcast every now and again. Like we do wish list episodes and we pick different tech and we compile our, you know, top 10 or 5 or whatever it happens to be wish lists from those particular... And maybe listeners could send in their wish lists and we could discuss...
Oh, that'd be fun.
...their picks as well for particular tech. So like what would you like to see out of SPFX from a wish list perspective? Stuff like that. I think it'd be quite fun.
So you live this space. Do you want to do our next one? Could be AKS?
Sure. Yeah. Or Graph.
Which one do you want to do first? Do you want to do Graph or Kubernetes?
I think Graph. It'd be more applicable to more people that listen to this show, I think.
Okay. So then why don't we do this? why don't you and I both come up with our wish list for Graph, what we want to see with Graph, and invite any of our listeners, if you have wish list items for the Microsoft Graph, for Microsoft Graph, there's no the in there. I learned that from writing training stuff for them. Submit your wish list to us too, and we will call some of them out on the show. We will do a Graph wish list episode. And I wonder if we should, we can be like sandbag it. Maybe we can try and get one of the Graph guys to join us and just hammer away at them.
Ooh, I've got some ideas. No, I'm kidding. No, they're all good people. These wish lists are, that's good feedback, right? It's like, it's just a way of expressing like what we'd like to see happen, I suppose.
I did this back in September of last year, of 2019. And I started out this, I was going to do this again when summer came around this year. And I was disappointed because when I went back and looked, it's all the stuff that I thought was really important, at least to me. Let me take a step back here. When I made this list, this is not a list that I think is what Andrew wants. There's an opinion of what Andrew thinks that the SharePoint framework needs. But I'm doing that, taking a step back and saying, I'm just trying to amplify the voice of what customers are asking for. So I'm not trying to say, here's selfishly what I want. There's a lot of stuff that I put in the list that I want that I've not put in there because I don't think that it applies to everybody. But there's things that I would like to see them do that I think would be good that I selfishly would like. But this isn't about me. I did add a few things this time around that I was really passionate about that I didn't put on there last time. And I'll be honest, a couple I'm getting kind of pissed about, and I think customers are as well. There's two of them that are really big to me, and it's things that should not be happening. One of them is around lists, and that is, it sure seems like the team that's building the SharePoint framework and the team that's building the lists interface, and I don't mean like the Microsoft List, capital L, the new app that they just came out with. I'm talking about just the browser-based interface. They don't talk to each other. They step on each other's toes. And when they ship stuff, they don't test each other's things. And I really don't think that's the case so much with SharePoint framework. It sure feels like the list team just ships stuff with no consideration of what the SharePoint framework team does. Because the SharePoint framework team, there's a bunch of UI or client-side events that are supposed to get raised when things happen. It's not so much that the SharePoint framework team is the one I think that's doing this. It's the list team. Because the list team seems to roll out updates that trigger things and break things. And then they don't come back and they don't address the issues that are broken. We've got a lot of outstanding. I even found a bunch of the issues that have been in the issue list that people have logged and said, these are confirmed bugs, but the SharePoint team is not fixing these things. So it's been kind of frustrating. That's the big one is with lists for me. The other one though is around the integration with SharePoint framework and Microsoft Teams. You're supposed to be able to use the SharePoint framework to build things and have them be and deploy them inside the inside of Microsoft Teams. Like you're able to build a web part and have that get surfaced as a personal app or as a tab. And there's a lot of times where it works in a lot of scenarios, but then all of the other scenarios are things where if I build something and it's supposed to work in the SharePoint framework and I'm supposed to deploy it over to Teams, I expect it to work in all the same places. I don't expect to say when I take it into Teams, it works great in the Teams web experience, but in the desktop experience or on mobile, it breaks. But only if I'm using Graph or if I'm doing anything with Auth. That kind of stuff, those sharp edges, I mean, that leads me to tell people like, should I use the SharePoint framework to build stuff for Teams? I'm like, no, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it right now. And it's just known stuff that's there.
That is really painful. We've definitely experienced that. And like Auth will work for a while and then something will change and it'll break, but only in like seemingly, you know, iOS app or the desktop app or something like that. But it's fine in the web app and it's just like, come on. Mm-hmm. Really?
It's frustrating.
Yep.
It really is frustrating. The other big one, I think, I mean, I've got one or two other ones that are there.
Yeah.
But I will tell you the one that I think is this is kind of an ask, but it's an ask on the behalf of the developer community and customers. Today, if you want to customize a form in SharePoint, the story is use Power Apps. The thing that people have been asking for, it is by far the number one requested feature when you do a workshop back in, you know, BC before COVID. When you do a workshop at a conference and you'd say, what is the number one thing that people want? Without fail, everyone always asks, I want to be able to use the SharePoint framework to create a custom form. And my ask to them is just let me have the ability as a developer, I can already build a web part and deploy as a single page app and take over an entire form. I have, let me do the exact same thing, but let me then go in and modify using the REST API. Let me go modify the new form, the display form, and the edit form of that form and to tell it to say, use my page and just send me on the query string on the URL parameter, just send me the ID of the item for the list. If you do those things, then I can implement my own stuff. And I understand that Microsoft is probably not letting me do that. They're probably not, they're not respecting those properties on a modern list because it takes away from a license that people could use for Power Apps. Hmm. But that's what customers want.
Yeah.
It's something that we're not even, I'm not even asking for Microsoft to just to do all that much here. I'm just saying, look, if there's a set, if there's a property that's set, don't use your form stuff. Let me just take over everything and say, look, you're on, you're off the reservation. You got to manage all data access, read, write, all that stuff. I'm like, fine, I got it. I got a REST API. I can do it.
Hmm.
See what people do with it.
Yeah, I'm conflicted about this. Like, I don't understand their reasoning. I'm not sure if it's intentional or not. You know, curious.
I don't know.
These are good. These are nice. I mean, I guess the biggies are be better with SPFX and Teams. Don't mess up with extensions and list stuff and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And let us customize where people want to customize with Power Apps.
Yep.
Is that fair?
It's really just, let me do custom forms. Let me do custom forms on lists. That's it. Everything else right. I can do. And then, of course, all the old stuff that I had from last year that they haven't touched.
Yeah, your post is great because it's got like links to the issues list. So people have logged issues in GitHub on the Git repo or the repo, the spdevdocs repo. And you go link to them. So some of them have got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 issues with the list conflict between SPFX and lists. Crazy.
I don't know. We'll see if something comes out of it. Nothing came out of it last year. So just cross our fingers and maybe something comes out of it this year. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe not. We'll see.
Fingers crossed.
We will see. How would you like to pivot into some picks?
Let's do it.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework. Back to the show.
All right, Mr. CJ, we're going to do our picks today. You've got a pick. I got a pick. Why don't you tell us, share us your pick?
Sure. Yeah, I can be quite quick with this one. I signed up for the new Starlink internet beta for when it, the SpaceX one, for when it arrives. It's pretty limited, but fortunately, Seattle is in one of the areas. It says Seattle and Germany, strangely enough. So it's like one's a city, one's a country. So if you're in, apparently Seattle and Germany will be the first regions to get the trials with a full sort of official commercial launch in North America ready for next year, or late this year, sorry. So Starlink, is the new internet service platform from SpaceX. They've been pumping up these satellites to go launch. Apparently Seattle's on the list, which is funny because the reason Seattle is on the list is because the Starlink offices are in Seattle, right? So I signed up for the beta. We'll see if I get picked. I'm sure a lot of people have signed up, so I don't hold out a lot of hope, but I'd love to give it a shot. I think it'd be really cool.
I can't wait to see what the stats are for it. I can't the latency and then specifically the download number. I mean, the upload number, I don't expect it to be tremendous, but I'm really looking forward to seeing the latency and the download number.
They're promising 1 gigabit a second, a latency of around 30 milliseconds.
That's pretty damn impressive for a satellite base.
Yeah, I mean, it's very low Earth orbit, right? So it's not like normal satellite you'd be talking to for this sort of stuff, which would be in geostationary. So it's this is the difference, right? This is his thing. It's like low Earth, faster latency.
It'd be interesting to see how the numbers come back. And it kind of goes in well with the pick from last week, trying to, you know, give him the sunshade. So apparently, like, the next Starlink that goes up is the one that's going to have the, or the next constellation that goes up. Sorry. The next launch that goes up with the batch of Starlink satellites on board is going to have the sunshades that we talked about last week in my pick last week.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Cool.
You're a Kubernetes guy, aren't you?
I love it. Yes.
One of the coolest things about Kubernetes, would you say, is just the ability to just scale, like rapidly scale?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The flexibility.
Can you imagine what it would be like if you could just, if you had a plane like in the middle of a war and you needed to attack something and all of a sudden you had all these new targets, and wouldn't you just love to scale those targets, scale the bombs out and just shoot them all over the place? You have more bombs than you really had.
Sure, I suppose.
So that's not what this is, but in the next iteration of the B-21 stealth bomber from the United States Air Force, it's going to be using Kubernetes on flight-ready hardware to help maintain the entire, they don't say exactly what they're using it for, but Kubernetes is going to be on the next B-21 stealth bomber. That's pretty freaking cool.
That's pretty awesome. Like, it's fascinating where Kubernetes is popping up and where people are running it. And this is just another one of those, like, what the, wow, okay, it's pretty sweet. Apparently, I'm reading the quote here. It said, there's somebody, Dr. Will Roper, who's the Assistant Secretary of Acquisition and Technology and Logistics, said something on LinkedIn about that the team had just run a containerized software on Kubernetes on flight-ready hardware, another step towards DevStar, our initiative to bring radical autonomy software development. DevStar sounds a lot like Death Star to me. Oh, that's quite fun.
There's a funny little bit to this, or a bit of irony to this. Quote, a final consideration, Kubernetes started life at Google, and staff there had previously protested against efforts like Project Maven and image recognition AI for the military. Google eventually threw that system away. As the internet giant is still big on Kubernetes, they might the chocolate factory staff or the wider Kubernetes community, now that it's open source, make its displeasure known, having Kubernetes on being used on this. So
possibly.
Quite interesting.
I'm sure there'll be some mixed opinions on it and all that. And I just think it's kind of cool to see all the different uses for it. Not necessarily this particular one, but, you know, whatever. I'm sure it gets used in all sorts of other interesting ways as well. It's like when I saw, you know, the astronauts using, I can't remember what it was at the time, some sort of Twitter program or something like that on the ISS. I thought that was pretty cool too. It's just cool to see where technology gets used.
It really is. Well, cool.
All right, man. Have a good holiday next week. I'll miss you. But we'll see you again when you get back.
Sounds good to me. I will see you soon, bud.
Be safe and don't get the COVIDs.
I will not. That's where we're going. I can't imagine a better place to be socially isolating than the Keys, where there's nothing around me except for just water.
Sounds wonderful. All right, have a good one.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find out about our show and grow the audience, and we would really appreciate it. If you got a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3 and provide a link to it so that we can play your question on the show. You can also subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts, in the Google Play Store, Spotify, or your podcatcher of choice. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website, microsoftcloudshow.com. You'll get notices of each new episode as well as the show notes sent directly to you each week. We'll be back with another episode next week. Thanks for listening.